Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:43 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 16th, and I thought we'd kick off with the yield curve spread because it is continuing to push higher. That's despite the fact that anything over about 70 basis points historically has contributed to downward pressure on asset prices. We haven't seen any evidence of that on this occasion because the federal government in the USA, as well as the Federal Reserve, are both standing ready to provide additional assistance in terms of asset purchases if there were to be any significant deterioration. One thing we also know is that as the yield curve steepens, it is going to raise the refinancing costs of the government and any corporates out there, and it also helps to pad out the balance sheets of banks as well as mortgage REITs. So banking generally has come through this pandemic era in pretty good form. The S&P 500 banks was in positive territory today. It's been consolidating in the region of the upper side of this base formation for most of the last month, but it does look increasingly likely that it will be able to push on the upside. When we think about the mortgage REITs sector, it tends to be extremely highly levered, but a widening yield curve spread is positive for the sector, and it is continuing to push higher. It is a part of the financial sector where there are big yields that are still available, but of course they come with considerable risk. A widening yield curve, though, does certainly favor the sector, whereas you can see, for example, that when we had a tightening yield curve, then that was contributing to a very significant deterioration in the yield that they offer, and that weighed on their share prices because the only reason anyone ever buys them is because of the yield that's available. As we look at what's going on in terms of bond markets, well, we did have Jay Powell speaking today, and he was quite clear in stating that they're not going to raise rates until they see the whites of the eyes of inflation. Well, the 10-year Treasury yield is around 90 basis points. But when we look at the market rate of inflation and the U.S. break-evens, then it's right up to 1.92%. And 2% is the Federal Reserve's target. They want to see it exceeded on a sustained basis. But the market is already pricing in at least 1.9% inflation. In other words, when they say break even, what it really means is it's the bond yield that would be required in order to preserve an investment from the ravages of inflation. Well, right now you're getting 92 basis points, and the break even is at 1.92 basis points, so that we have negative interest rates of about 1%. And of course, that's positive for gold. So gold prices were steadier in here today, up about $10, continuing to bounce from the region of the trend mean. I think it's important to highlight that silver has been outperforming in no uncertain terms, and it has pushed back above the $25 level in here today. It's done that in the past, and the last time it did it in November, it got whacked right back down again the day after. So people are going to want to see the breakout sustained, and the move above $25, while encouraging, really does need to be sustained in order to truly confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. One thing I think it's important to highlight is that silver does tend to outperform gold once a bull market really does get going. And we might characterize that by the beginning of the second psychological perception stage of a bull market. So gold prices broke out in 2019, and it's been almost two full years before silver has really started to outperform. And generally, it tends to outperform for the entire duration of a bull market. So we saw that silver outperformed in no uncertain terms all the way up from the lows in 2008 to the ultimate peak for gold in 2011. Then silver came crashing back down and underperformed for almost the entire duration of the subsequent bear market, with the very brief exception of the rebound in 2016. It also, when we think about the fact that gold, in fact, bottomed sometime around 2000-2001, or somewhere in there, it took a couple of years before silver really did start to turn, and then it did outperform, albeit in a jerky manner, for the next 4 years. So we have evidence from past cycles that silver does act like high beta gold. And it is looking increasingly likely that this break of the almost decade-long relative downtrend has got legs and will be sustained. So there's clearly the potential that silver is moving back into pole position. Then when we think about platinum, it has historically traded above the price of gold. It's certainly not doing that right now. It's almost half the price of gold right now. But it has sustained the move, so far at least, above $1,000. And that is meaningful because it completes the five-year base formation. And if it can continue to sustain this breakout, well, then we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. Then when we think about the wider commodity complex, iron ore prices continue to push higher. And we've seen a clear response from the major iron ore producers. Vale is the closest to its lows. It is has been very heavily impacted by the dam disaster a few years ago, but it is exhibiting relative strength right now and has pushed on to new recovery highs. Of course, we do have some short-term overbought conditions right now in some of these metal producers, but at the same time, this does look like the beginning of a new bull market overall. And Rio Tinto is in the process of pushing through this 5,500 level. It's at a new closing level on monthlies, but on a weekly, then it has exceeded these levels in the past. So it's a big move on the upside overall. We're just not yet at a point where people are going to be willing to believe the prices that they're seeing for some of these really, what is effectively the oligarchy that controls the iron ore market. Fortescue is much more heavily levered to iron ore than other metals, than the primary producers, and it has accelerated higher over the course of the last couple of months. So we are getting some pause in consolidation right now, but as long as iron ore prices continue to do well, then it's hard to imagine that we're going to see much more than some pause in consolidation in the price. The one thing that really was a testament to good governance in the iron ore miners at the beginning of the bull market last time out in the early 2000s was that they were very disciplined in increasing supply. So against a background of rising demand, then they were able to control the market. And they didn't really invest in a great deal of new supply until new sources of supply started to pop up and compete. Fortescue was one of those, and it has been able to hold the breakout, but also it's been able to sustain itself throughout the bear market. And there were a significant number that didn't survive. So Atlas Iron Ore, may not be able to get to the... there is still a chart, but we can see, for example, that it was acquired in 2008. It's just an example of one of the large number of iron ore miners that went bust during the bear market. So we're back in a similar situation to what we had in the early 2000s, where the major producers are now being quite disciplined in terms of their supply. The other sector that is very disciplined in the quantity of metal that they're producing are the gold miners. They're now concentrating on free cash flow, and they're concentrating on raising dividends and rewarding shareholders. And that is exactly what they did not do during the last bull market. It was the reason that gold shares underperformed the gold price in the latter half of the bull market in the early 2000s. On this occasion, they've gone through a really difficult process of rationalization, and today they are almost all producing all-in sustaining cost prices, and for the vast majority, those all-in sustaining costs are in the region of about $1,000, and gold is trading closer to $1,900, so there is significant margin expansion for the vast majority of these miners. Of course, that also is increasing the scope for them to pay dividends. And in a very low interest rate environment, then anything that can outpace by a strong margin the reward that is being provided by governments, well, they're going to be appreciated by investors. And the gold shares index, or ETF, has steadied today from the region of the trend mean. This was also a big day for Bitcoin, and it rallied by about $1,800, pushing on to new all-time highs. I think it's important to pay attention to the log scale chart, and most particularly to pay attention to it over the course of the last 10 years, because Bitcoin has been through these three-year consolidations before. And the commonality that we have today with what happened before is extremely high. This is one of the things that I think is most interesting about Bitcoin, because there are no real hard fundamentals. And there is a running argument about what represents value. But the one thing that we do know is that it is a highly speculative asset, and people tend to come in and out on a herdish basis, and there is a strong core of people who are indelible believers. We have evidence of support being found in the region of the 1,000-day moving average on at least four occasions. We also have plenty of evidence of both phenomenal bull markets and crashes. But we also know that there have been occasions when it has spent 3 years ranging. We also know that following halvenings, there have been significant advances. There was a halvening in 2012, there was a halvening in 2016, and there was a halvening in May of 2020. And each of the other two occasions resulted in a big move on the upside, and we may now be looking at another one in the offing. So there is certainly scope for additional upside, as we have the halvening in the background, we have the end of the three-year consolidation, and then we are also starting to see institutional investors becoming more vocal about telling people that they've invested. So there is certainly a marketing effort to drum up support for investing in crypto funds. And then you have also got the same kind of activity going on in the crypto world that you tend to get by big investors like Bill Gross or Warren Buffett, where they initiate their positions and then they go off and talk to journalists about how wonderful the companies they've invested in are. And I think we're getting a very similar set of conditions in the cryptocurrency world today. And of course, it is also completely unregulated. So that is an additional point that points us in the direction of these, or at least it raises the potential that there are influences on the price that are being driven by either, depending on how one wants to characterize them, potentially dishonest or unscrupulous traders. But one way or the other, the price is going upwards. This is a very impressive breakout. Ethereum also rallied in here today. It was up $41, and this is a new closing high over the course of the last few years. So there is still ample scope for a number of the altcoins to play catch up with Bitcoin. And because they are smaller, they do tend to rally in a much more abrupt fashion. So Ethereum, for example, was up almost 10% in here today. Now, when we think about what the potential is, well, lots of people are going to start talking about not so much percentages, but multiples. And it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we do see similar type moves to what we saw in 2017. But of course, the higher the price goes, the greater the weight of money required to deliver those kinds of returns. And Bitcoin is still relatively small, particularly relative to any other asset class. So there is scope for Bitcoin to continue to rally, but it is the core asset people mostly want. And then the altcoins tend to be very high beta relative to gold. And they do have a lag in much the same way that silver has a lag relative to gold at the beginning of a bull market. So we can anticipate that they will move to outperformance relative to Bitcoin, only that it might just take a while. Now, as we look at what's going on in the UK, well, I think that it is likely there's going to be a deal. The EU said today that the last remaining obstacle was fishing. Well, obviously, self-determination and taking back control of its sovereign borders, and obviously fishing is going to certainly fall into that, but it's also that much of the rest of Europe's fleets rely on access to UK waters to fish. So that is going to be a sticking point. But at the same time, I think it is likely there will be a deal. There have been some fears that France, for example, would veto any deal that's arrived at. That would be a very low blow. It would be something that would really endanger relationships across the channel for a prolonged period. So it's not at all beyond the bounds possibility, but I still think that it is likely a deal will be reached. And the currency markets back above 110 are at least willing to give a better than 50-50 chance that that is in fact going to occur. But at the same time, we still have room for some volatility. The FTSE 250 has also continued to pause around this 20,000 level, but it is now closing above it. I do think that investors are willing to give the UK the benefit of the doubt in that a lot of the undervaluation that the UK has relative to other developed markets is in the price already. Anything that comes through in terms of good news will be positive for stocks. The Japanese market continues to push on, and this has been a very clear breakout from what was a 3-year range, and it's a great example of ranges being explosions waiting to happen. There is clear scope for additional upside here. This looks like a trend that has got room to run. When we think about Taiwan, it does tend to also be a high beta version of Japan, and it has been surging higher over most of this year, and it is now pushing on to new high ground for the first time in 30 years. So this has been a phenomenally long period of underperformance. One thing that we're seeing increasingly is that developed Asia is certainly firing on all cylinders. They've come through the coronavirus in much better positions than most other countries. Their export sectors are doing very well, so they are benefiting from the massive monetary and fiscal stimulus all over the world without having to endure the kind of trials that other countries have. So the South Korean market is also pushing on to new high ground. China's CSI 300 was also in positive territory today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. The challenge for the stock market is that the currency continues to appreciate. That is impacting the competitiveness of China's manufacturing sector. And the renminbi remains in a really quite consistent uptrend overall. When we think about the broad commodity complex, the CCI index is now above the 440 area, closing in on new highs for the last 6 years. This looks like a clear recovery candidate. When we think about the oil price, there are still fears that we're going to have a supply glut for a significant period of time, but the price continues to rebound and oil is back up to $51. It's been very steady. There's been really a clear lack of volatility overall. And what it is also suggesting is that we are back on a global reflation environment. There's, I think, the clear potential that value is going to outperform by a significant or in a significant fashion, because the yield curve spread is increasing, yields have steadied, and value has come way off its lows. When we think about the fact that base formations are being completed, that commodities are starting to do better, it's generally cyclical sectors that are tending to do better, inflationary pressures are starting to be priced into the market, and then we have the fact that shares like Amazon have been ranging now for the last 5 months. Now that has massively unwound the very wide overextension relative to the trend mean, so that's positive. But considering the fact that it's reasonable to anticipate that Amazon is going to have a blowout fourth quarter, the Prime Day sale was delayed into the fourth quarter, and the brick and mortar retail has really taken a hit in here. Amazon has been able to pick up a lot of that business, and yet with all that good news, the price has not pushing on to new high ground, despite the fact that it is positive in here today. Then when we think about Apple, they've released a large number of new phones, but the share price has been ranging for most of the last few months, but at least it is pushing on to new high ground. While these large companies are not declining in a dynamic manner, they're not leading on the upside either. And that suggests that leadership has changed, and there is definitely a more of a willingness to give the benefit of the doubt to recovery candidates overall. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.